Maybe we should kick off the podcast.
I know. We're like at hour one. We just hit hour one and we're like, what do you want to talk about today? Let's talk about this and this and this and this. Good times. Okay, so, let's kick it off. Okay, so I hate my podcast voice sometimes. Like, I know.
I won't look.
When I get really excited, well, this is my podcast. Like, when I get really excited, I just sound so high-pitched, but whatever. Okay. Hey, everybody. This is Nadia Kane from the Strong Athletic Podcast, and guess who is with me today?
It's me. It's April Fournier, also known as Jumpy McGee.
Oh, yeah, and I guess I'm also known as Smarty Pants. Hey, April, why are you on the show today?
I'm on the show today because I'm going to be on the show a lot for season two because guess who is the new co-host of the Strong Athletic Podcast?
Is that you?
Woohoo! It's me!
Yay! Thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me this season. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to share this time with you.
We don't even know how long this season is going to last.
We don't. It's a surprise, too.
If this is like season two and then there's never another season because this one just goes on forever.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever. Okay, so you and I share a lot of interests in coaching and in essence teaching and then learning in essence, like being an athlete and being a student. And so it was a no-brainer to ask you if you wanted to co-host this season because we just have so many shared interests for topics that we could discuss. I'm going to put in a little nutshell why I do this podcast and like why it's important to me that people listen to it. And then I was thinking you would do the same thing.
Perfect.
I know that playing sports has been really important for me as a human, and I have always been happier when I play sports. And I know that certain points in my life, I've quit sports, and then I wasn't very happy. So I did retire from roller derby, and I do miss it a lot, but that was more like if I don't retire from the sport, I'll never do anything else in life. And I just thought that maybe there's a couple of other things to do. So maybe I should also start paying attention to what's going on in the world. So I thought it was a good time to retire, but I did, you know, give derby like 15 years of my life, which is a pretty long time. So get this, when I was a kid and people were trying to teach me things, there was a really good chance that I was not going to learn from their instruction. And then I carried that into sports with me. And so if I had a coach that was trying to teach me how to do, I don't know, any number of things, it was highly likely that I wasn't going to learn from them unless they were coaching me in a really specific way. And so then it just came down to if I had natural talent in that sport, and that's what was going to keep me in it. I know that a lot of people have the same experience. Also, pretty early on in my life, I had to deal with certain adults that I didn't like how they treated me, and I didn't like how they taught me. And I really found issue with how they were trying to teach me things, but in their opinion, they were like the teacher. It was time for me to learn. I was a student. And so early on, I became quite offended if somebody would try to teach me in a way that I found like vulgar or rude or offensive. And so I carried that with me. And then I've also just like underperformed in sports. So like there's underachieving in the classroom. Like I've done plenty of that. Like it took me a long time to finish college because there was so much I didn't comprehend. And there were people that just thought it was like a lack of my ability or my intelligence, or I just didn't want to be there. And then in sports, I underperformed a lot. And it really wasn't until the last 6 years of my athletic career that I realized that I was actually incredibly strong and I could produce power and I was really smart and capable, and that I was actually pissed off at that point because I was like, you know, I think these coaches just devalued my ability and I think that they just took the easy route, which was like, I don't really feel like teaching this kid, so I'm just going to like, I'm just not going to pay attention to them, and if they stick around, fine, but if they don't stick around, it's like no skin off my back, you know? So I don't want that to happen to other people, April. And that is one of the reasons that I started the Strong Athletic Podcast. And it's equally for coaches and athletes alike, because, you know, both need to be good at communicating with one another and talking about expectations and knowing why they're all there. I know that there's also barriers to being in sports and barriers of entry and reasons that people get pushed out of sports that have nothing to do with like their learning style. And it's more to do with like how they look, the color of their skin, the neighborhood that they grew up in, how many parents they have, where they got to go to school, where they didn't get to go to school. They had to work a second job, if they had to stop school sport because they had kids. You know, like there's any number of reasons that people can, their experience in sport can be impacted. I'm really hoping to invite guests onto the show this season so that we can learn more about them and their stories, so that other people can just hear about like those situations, how they dealt with them, how they couldn't deal with them, what was in their control, what wasn't. So that's me. What about you, April?
Can I just say ditto? No.
Yeah, ditto. Yeah.
You know, I started listening to this podcast, one, because I've been coached by you a few times in my derby career and really think that my learning style clicks with your teaching style. And so I was very excited for the podcast itself. But then I started to find that the podcast content about coaching just paralleled so many other things for me as an educator myself, by career, but also in managing people and working with teams in my work life. And so I just found it really interesting that those same types of strategies and conversations just really translate across environments. And so for me, as an athlete and as a learner, I have always been one who, I wouldn't say necessarily hard to coach, but very driven to always kind of be the first and best. And when that didn't happen, was very frustrating for me that my own expectations of myself didn't match my performance. And the coaches that I've had, you know, throughout my life, whether it be t-ball or track and field or softball or even roller derby, I haven't always clicked with their learning styles and some of that and their teaching styles. And I think some of that comes back to our discussions around, you know, expectations and clear communications and knowing what I expect from my coach as a teacher, but what also my coach expects from me as a learner and an athlete, and then how we're going to find that right combination that gets the best performance out of both of us. And I've not really had very many experiences where the magic has happened. And I think about, well, if I know all of the things that I know and have all the resources that I have, and I'm still having this difficulty connecting, I think about all of the other athletes that are out there that maybe don't have the same resources or same information or same access, you know, to strong coaches, and how many athletes maybe then decide, you know what, sports just aren't for me. And then I just know all of the things that I've gained from sports, you know, confidence, athletic output. I think I'm very similar to you when I'm not doing sports. My body and brain are not as happy as they are when they are doing sports. And so I think all of the skills and all of the things that we get from sports, when we don't give people that same opportunity to have those experiences, you know, for me, that's just not okay. I feel like there's so much opportunity out there for us, and sports starts so young. And so that's such a great time while children are developing to instill some of these really great skills so that they can carry those through, you know, into their teens and into adulthood and into, you know, being professionals. As an educator by trade, specifically an early interventionist, my whole career is built around looking at skill deficits and looking at skill delays and trying to create strategies to compensate for those and build those up and catch them up so that there are, you know, equal opportunities to perform, you know, where the expectations are. So it's been fun kind of taking my professional world and professional life and using that in sports and in a coaching way, because I've done, you know, coaching for girls youth flag football, I've done coaching for roller derby, so I've been working on that skill myself. So I think all of these things kind of coming together and then meshing and making this beautiful, we'll call it a cake, making this beautiful cake for this podcast, I'm really excited. I think it's going to be super fun, lots of really good and important discussions, and I really hope everyone enjoys it.
You know, I love your education that you bring to this. So what you've actually studied and gone to school for. So can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So I initially started, I did everything kind of backwards. So I had, you know, kids first, then got married and then went to college and then found a career. But my first stab at college and career was actually in the business world. And so I got my undergraduate in business management because I was working at an insurance company and kind of working my way up the corporate ladder. And so I was really interested in the idea of project management and continuous improvement, because I just feel like for every system that you have, you can always look at it and look at ways to make improvement, whether there's new people coming in or new technologies or new information. It always gives us an opportunity to change and improve and evolve. And so that really spoke to me. And then when I had our twins in 2008, when I went back to work, when they were about 2 years old, discovered that one of our twins was diagnosed with autism. I didn't know anything about that because my entire life and world had really been, you know, business and, you know, teams and management. And so I just by nature and by personality, I'm, I think, a lifelong learner. I really love to get information and learn new things. And so I went into full-on learner mode to learn everything I could about autism and how my son was going to develop and what were the best ways to provide intervention and what were the best ways to support him so that we could compensate for the things that he was lacking. At that time, he was nonverbal, so he didn't have any words. He was self-injurious, meaning when he got frustrated because he didn't have words, he would engage in self-harm. So he would like hit himself in the head, or he would hit his head, you know, off the floor, off the wall, or, you know, he would like scratch his arms, or he would like cry because he didn't have the language to be able to tell us why he was frustrated. And then he just really didn't have a lot of social connection to his twin or really to anyone in the family. And so it was hard to engage him and play and hard to, you know, really get into his world. He was very kind of isolated. And so we were able to engage with our local early intervention agency to get some help. I didn't really know what to do outside of that. You know, you can read all the books you want, but until you see someone really demonstrate what they mean when they talk about, you know, teaching your child how to get speech skills, the book doesn't even do the work justice. And so we had someone come to our house 5 days a week and sit on the floor with us and with him and show us, here's how we can get him engaged in play, and here's how we can work on just gaining his attention, and here's how we can interrupt some of those behavior cycles that then result in a self-injury. And month by month, we started to see our little boy emerge from this, you know, world that he had been shut off in. And just that transformation, what for me was incredible and just, you know, revelatory. And he then transitioned into a special education preschool where he started in a very small classroom with one-to-one support. And we continued to just see this evolution for him where, you know, he started to have, you know, sentences, and he started to have spontaneous play, and he started to be able to do life skills for himself. And I think until you've seen, you know, a typically developing child compared right next to a non-typically developing child, you don't really understand how magical it is for a kiddo to say, I want juice, or, you know, see them play with a toy functionally instead of just like banging it against something. So, you know, we had kids prior to that. And so we kind of knew the things that we were missing out on. So I think that definitely was hard for us to be able to watch him struggle so much. But then we saw what this early intervention and early special education did for him. And then he was able to transition into a regular kindergarten classroom, you know, with some pullout, with, you know, extra supports and all of that. But he was still able to be around his peers and learn by watching and modeling the things that they were doing. And so it was when he was transitioning into kindergarten, I had one day where I was in my office. I was managing like a team of 22 people, and we just were responsible for like incoming images for insurance claims and then attaching them to claims. And then, you know, they moved on in the process. So it really was truly a widget in this machine, and it's important work. So I don't want to discount what, you know, people do. It just felt like I was not a fit for that work. And I just really felt called to go learn more about this thing that changed the trajectory of my son's life. And so I ended up going back to school to get my master's degree in early childhood special education, and then went to work in at-home behavioral services, and then worked in a special education preschool, and then eventually ended up working for the agency that did all of this work for my son, because I just felt like one of the disconnects in that whole process for us as parents was we didn't understand the speak of special education and, you know, legal terms and some of the jargon that comes out. And so we felt very helpless through a lot of that process, not understanding the terminology and not knowing if what they were proposing was even right for our kiddo. We just had to trust the system that they were going to do what was best for him. And I didn't like that experience. And I knew, you know, for us, we were, you know, college educated parents, you know, that were still in an intact family, that were, you know, relatively financially okay. You know, we had secure housing, we had secure food, we had secure employment. So then I thought about all of the other families. We live in Portland, which is the biggest city, you know, in southern Maine and the most, you know, diverse city. And so I thought about, what about the other parents that English isn't their first language, or they have recently claimed asylum in our city from, you know, a different country, and this is a completely new culture for them, or, you know, they don't have both parents around, or, you know, they don't have the same access to resources or finances or secure food or housing. What about those parents going into this process, and who is looking out for them, and who is advocating for them, and who is making this understandable so that they understand what they're agreeing to and they know exactly what services their kiddo is going to get. And so in becoming an administrator, that was my focus, is being the friendly voice and the friendly face on the other side of the table that slowed the whole process down and said, so I want to make sure you understand what we're going to do for your child. And I want to make sure that you also understand, you know, what they've been diagnosed with and what questions do you have and what resources can we help connect you to? Because we do know from every study that's been done, if you want a child to succeed, you have to make sure that they have all of those foundational needs met. So they have secure food, they have secure housing, they have a safe place to live, and then they have access to education. So education's kind of that next level thing. If you want them to be available for education, you have to meet all those other basic needs first. And so helping families in that manner, instead of, okay, you're my next 30-minute meeting, we're going to knock out all these things, I need you to sign these forms, okay, cool, now I need to get on to my next meeting. There are absolutely two different approaches you can take. I opted for the one that I thought would get the best results for that child and that family. And I feel really good about, you know, the hundreds of families that I worked with before I moved into the new role that I have now. But I think being an educator has always been a little bit of who I am just as a person. I've just now done a lot of school and a lot of training and a lot of learning to refine that craft so that I'm not only educating by, you know, career in this, you know, special education field. You know, I'm doing that in the Team Indigenous work that I do. I'm doing that in the diversity and inclusion work I do with WFTDA. I do that right now as I'm getting ready to run for city council here in Portland, educating the public so that they understand what their resources are that are available, what, you know, their options are for when they're casting their votes, how the different candidates differ. So educator has always been a part of who I am. And that just, funny enough, translates into just another way of being a coach. So yeah, so that's what I do.
I like that. Like I get a little nervous because I don't have that background in education, but I definitely understand the desire to learn more about your son and how y'all are going to approach the situation. And so you're just like, well, why don't I just go and study it? Because I'm going to be studying it no matter what. So like, might as well get another degree and then help people through the same process, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, for me in sports, it's like, oh, well, this was good, this wasn't good. I want to help people through the same process.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, when people choose, there's always that, you know, quote unquote calling. And I think a lot of people follow or answer that call because there was some situation that mobilized them to say, oh, I remember how I experienced this and I want to change that for somebody else. So now I'm going to go and become a part of this process so that the next person that goes through this has a better experience than I have. And I have the chance to make that better. And, you know, it could be from, you know, working, you know, in a business office through going into education. There's just so many different ways that we're able to, you know, coach and improve and teach and educate. It's not just sports and it's not just education and it's not just business and it's not just being a parent. It can be all of those things combined.
What's your opinion on calling coaches the teachers of the field? Do you find that there's more similarities between a coach and a teacher than there are differences?
Oh, absolutely. It's, I think, one and the same role, really. You know, coaches have to do research so that they know what they're going to train or what they're going to teach their athletes. Teachers have to do research to know what they're going to, you know, train and teach their classroom. So it's a classroom, but it's just a classroom in a non-traditional sense.
It's interesting because, you know, sports, of course, is competitive. And so the coaches, when they're teaching the same exact content to the athletes on their team, they're also trying to sort out how to beat everybody else at it. And I feel like in education, you know, in education, there are schools that want to be like the best schools, but it feels like it's the approach isn't really like, we want to beat everybody else at this. But am I wrong? Or is that part of education, like wanting to be the best school, wanting to be the best teacher?
There is a different win that you get in the education setting. So like for in special education, for example, I'm not trying to do better than, you know, another student or get better results. But what I am trying to beat is whatever is holding them back. And so it's not necessarily competition against others. It's competition against whatever that deficiency or whatever that delay or whatever that challenge is. So it's, I think it's still a competition. I have a kiddo in one of my classrooms right now who, when she started our program, she was selectively mute. And so selective mutism is actually a form of anxiety. It's not actually a speech and language disorder at all. It has to do with anxiety. And so we weren't really sure, you know, it's hard to get a, you know, 3.5, 4-year-old to explain why they're feeling anxious or even recognize that what is going on for them is anxiety. And so we have been working with her consistently for the better part of a school year just to get sound and speech and to have her feel comfortable enough and safe enough so that, you know, she'll use her words at school because she feels comfortable and safe enough to do that at home. So that's the selective piece of when she's going to talk. And what we've seen and what we were trying to beat, if you will, was that feeling of not being safe or not having an environment that was comfortable enough for her to share. And so it was manipulating the classroom and trying to create really supportive situations so that eventually we start to get little bits of speech, you know, single words whispered. And then we started to get sentences whispered. And today she sang Five Little Monkeys Jumping on the Bed, yelling into the screen where her speech therapist was because she was just so excited to go, no more monkeys jumping on the bed. But when you hit that, it is the exact, I equate it to the same thing as if you're the hitting coach and you see someone you've been working with who couldn't connect with the ball, you finally see them hit that single or double or home run. You're like, we did it! We did it! And it's a very similar feeling. And, you know, we didn't beat another team, but we did beat what was holding her back. And so I think there are so many similarities more than differences between coaching and teaching in the classroom.
I agree with that. Like, I do think that coach is just another word for teacher. For a while, I was questioning if I should teach people how to coach since I didn't go to school for it. And if it was just basically like egregious to assume that I had, you know, enough information to call myself an expert. But I think I finally came to terms with the fact that I have all the experience of how not to be coached and how not to be taught. And I did so poorly in school just because I couldn't figure out how to navigate school, how to stay in school, not get kicked out, and how to how to function as a student. I'm just like incredibly intrigued by just learning how people learn and people don't learn. I think that that's probably the most important to me, is how people don't learn. And so whenever I coach people, I just assume that they haven't learned anything and that I need to teach them how they learn, you know, rather than just teach them how I want to teach. Because I think that those are very different.
Right. Well, and I think that it's super intuitive of you, because what I have experienced just in going through becoming an educator, both for educating adults. So when I worked in the insurance industry, I got trained on how to train others on, you know, content and systems and processes. And then, you know, as an educator now, have been trained how to train and teach, you know, children with disabilities. But one of the first things that has been at the start of every train the trainer or teacher training that I've done is some sort of, whether it's personality styles inventory, learning styles inventory, or communication styles inventories, to get more information about the learners. And that's like step one, learning how your group learns, so then you as the instructor can adapt your instruction. So you have people who do really good with auditory, you know, teaching, and you have others that are like, no, I need to, you know, have all of these modalities combined or my brain is just not going to pay attention. Or you have others who are just, give it to me visually, show me what I need to do and I can, you know, copy what you do. So I think that's, you know, super intuitive that you need to know a little bit about your learners before you start in with, this is how you do X, Y, and Z.
I feel like a lot of people don't know how they learn. So when I ask athletes if they have a request for how I coach them, it's almost like nobody's ever asked them that before. You know, and when you're a coach of like 50 people, you can't necessarily ask everybody exactly how they want to be coached. But I don't know, I think that there is a way that you can juggle it so that you're trying to speak to everybody. So in athletics, I think a lot of times if someone was good at running, they become a running coach. But in education, if someone was good at reading, they don't necessarily become like a reading teacher, you know, like, but in athletics, we tend to find people that were good at the sport and then ask them to coach it.
And
that's not necessarily the best means of finding educators.
Yeah. I think it's who has time to do it and who will just say yes.
Yeah.
I think, and if you look at youth sports, you know, you know, my kids have gone through T-ball and Little League and football and, you know, all of the sports in between. But consistently with all of these sports, it's always someone, whoever is like the league director, sends out an email to all of the parents and says, okay, so we have five teams. I need five coaches. Just hoping, really, that with all of these athletes that have signed up, there are five parents that are willing to step into a coaching role. Not necessarily that the parents are qualified to go into that coaching role, but as long as they can pass a fingerprint check and they can show up semi-consistently to the field to lead practices, then they get the go ahead to coach. But when you think about child development and how much of us is influenced and shaped and molded, you know, before we turn like 10, that's a recipe for disaster.
I know. I was just thinking of how many kids were fucked up by their coach. Like, how many kids had coaches that just like, oh, they made them feel horrible about themselves. And then they never returned to sports, but they also like ended up with like a horrible sense of self or horrible self-confidence. And it's all because little Tommy's dad was able to volunteer on Tuesdays and Thursdays and nobody else is good, you know? And little Tommy's dad has anger issues or, you know, like, I mean, we're laughing, but it does happen, you know?
It does.
It is funny because we wouldn't do that in education, you know? It's not like, raise your hand if you're able to teach these kids Monday through Friday.
Right,
you know, like teachers, I mean, but It's also because, you know, sports is extracurricular, so it's not something that is considered mandatory.
Right. And it's definitely, for those listening, it's not to discount the parents that volunteer. I have been that parent. My husband has been that parent. And we have lots of friends who have been that parent. So if you step up and do that, we are grateful for you.
Yes, thank you. Absolutely. I'm grateful too. I'm also grateful. I don't have kids, but I'm grateful.
But I think it's also recognizing that when you do step into that role, it's more than just, I can show up on Tuesday and Thursdays at 5:30. There is a little more preparation and work that should go into stepping into that role, because hopefully as you're listening to this, you start to maybe think to yourself, oh, you know, there are things that these kiddos can take away from our experience together. And I, as the adult and as the coach, have the opportunity to decide if that's going to be a really positive and great experience that makes them want to come back and do this again, or this is kind of like an, okay, my kid now has to be dragged to this sport on Tuesdays and Thursdays because they're not having any fun. Adults out there, you have the power to control that. And if you're not sure how to be a coach or how to do it, there are lots of resources. Hopefully this podcast. Listen to the podcast that will help you grow those skills so that you can be confident in stepping up maybe more than once. And maybe you find that you love it and you want to keep doing it too.
Yeah. And also really this podcast is about like communicating with others, getting your point across, trying to keep relationships intact, learning how to learn from others, learning how to teach others in a way that's not offensive, you know? And so in a lot of ways, it's just like lessons for life in general, just under the disguise of how to do it on a sports team. So April, there's so many things that interest me in regards to athletics and athletes. One thing that I'm interested in is all the effort that's put towards getting kids into sport and how little effort there is towards putting adults into sports or getting adults into sports, and especially women.
Yeah, so. I think that's definitely interesting for me as well, because I think there's such a huge push, you know, as you drive around our city, you know, here in Portland, when you get close to like August, all of these signs go up around the city for youth football and youth soccer and get your kids. And there's emails that go all over the place, and there's social media posts for, you know, get your kids signed up for all of these things. But then beyond high school, there's not really that much. There's some recreational leagues and, you know, adult kickball and any of the really competitive baseball or soccer or basketball is really more male dominated. It's really not, there's not very many women's sports out there, which I think is, again, why roller derby was really appealing to me. But then another thing that I'm excited to talk about, you know, as we talk about the different topics on the podcast, will be equity and having the resources to access all of these sports. And that's something for us as a family and as parents, you know, we have four kids. And so if our kids wanted to play football and hockey and baseball, and we couldn't afford it, there's no way. And so there have been times where we've applied for the different youth scholarships because, you know, while $180 might not seem like a barrier to some families, to other families, that it's like, no, my kid can't play. I can't come up with $180 to fund this. And so looking at not only at the youth level, but also at the adult level, what are some of the barriers that get thrown up to access the sport that prevent us from having a larger reach to some of our very important community members that could really benefit from that community. So that's definitely something I'm very interested in talking more about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sports, they're expensive. You know, roller derby is very expensive just to get like a decent kit. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to drop quite a bit of money. And when I was a coach, like I wasn't a cheap coach to bring out, you know, like you had to invest money to actually bring me out. And I think a lot of sports are the same, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure. I remember getting like my first roller skate package quote. And, you know, I had no grounds for comparison, really. I was just like, okay, cool. I'm going to go do this thing and it's going to be great. And I think, you know, I have like $200. It's going to be fine. And then like getting that first quote for like all of the gear and the skates and the wheels. And it was just like almost I want to say between $500 to $600. And I was like, oh my God, my husband is not going to sign off on this. And, you know, of course he has been incredibly supportive because now 7 years later, I'm, you know, still doing derby. But at that initial entry to a sport, if that's the price point, there are people that are not going to take that first step because that's a big investment for something that you're not sure you love yet and you're not sure that you can do. And then there's also the time, quote unquote, time cost that we don't always talk about, but that's also something that can dictate whether or not you can advance in this sport to different levels.
One of the podcast episodes we're going to have is obligations versus motivation and people, you know, saying to their teammates, like, you're not motivated enough. And it's like, no, actually, I just have all these other obligations in life. So I really do love the sport.
Right. But kids' birthday tournament, you know, am I going to do stuff or am I going to give that opportunity to my kids so that they can do that stuff? And then trying to find that balance, you know, that's really, really tricky.
Yeah, no, it is tricky. So I am really intrigued by that because I also know, like, I still quote you. So one of the best things I've ever heard you say is that sports transcends language and that you can just play a sport with people and you don't need to know how to communicate with them. And I just love that. And I think that sports also has the capacity to bring people together. And it's also shown that it has the capacity to bring people together and also help to make meaningful change happen. If you don't have access to that, or you're missing out on it, or at some early age, some dumbass told you you were shitty at it. And so you never tried it again. Like, those are all barriers, you know, to being there.
Yeah, for sure. If you, Nadia, and listeners have not seen the new Nike ad, you have to watch it because it just, they fuse different sports together in like a split screen.
Okay.
And it's, you know, every sport and every athlete, and it's absolutely beautiful, but it just talks about that same concept of sports transcends language and culture because, you know, we as a global people right now are going through something very real together that's impacting all of us. And just the message that this sends, it was just really, really, really powerful. So if you have a chance, definitely watch it. I, you know, have conflicting emotions about Nike themselves, but this was a really beautiful piece that I would absolutely encourage people to watch. But if you think about right now how, you know, I think in the first WNBA game, when they started playing the anthem, the players walked off the court and stayed off the court until it was done as a way to protest that, you know, they still haven't, you know, brought Breonna's killers to justice. And so I think there's just so many ways that, gosh, if you didn't have access to, you know, being a part of that movement, there's just so many ways that now that's impacting social change, which is amazing. But then when you put those barriers in place where people can't experience that, we're losing, you know, so much in lots of different communities because we can't make those connections.
And also just like where sports teams are the most prevalent and where kids programs are the most prevalent, where they aren't, where the fields are nice even, like, you know, like where there's actually basketball hoops on the backboard or where like the parks haven't been replenished in years and nobody cares.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, I think even here in Portland, there's a really big equity issue that we've been battling, you know, in Little League forever. The girls' field is like one of the worst fields, just from an accessibility standpoint, from a field maintenance standpoint, from a safety standpoint. And so it's kind of always the afterthought for all of the fields. And that was frustrating for me for many years being on the board and then also, you know, having kids that went through. And that's that way, I think, consistently across, if the girls have a field at all, supposed to by law, but you look at all of the different places where girls' sports are played, it's not often where all of the money is spent. And, you know, the girls' fields don't get the lights that, you know, cost tens of thousands of dollars, and they don't get the really nice field maintenance. They don't get, you know, the built-in bathrooms and snack shack. And that, you know, that's a huge equity issue because if you're playing in really shitty conditions, are you really going to stick with it when you see well, if I look, you know, across the way here, there's this beautifully manicured field that gets mowed, you know, every other day. The lines, you know, on the field are beautifully drawn. There's really comfortable bleacher seating for all the parents. There's parking, and our field has, like, you know, tumbleweeds and, you know, dust, and you can kind of see where things are supposed to go. So it's that equity piece that, you know, again, from youth all the way into adulthood.
Yeah, just getting us ready.
Yes, yeah. We're just setting your expectations low, just so you know what can happen. I think it was, there was a college here in Maine that the girls, it was either girls lacrosse or girls field hockey, I think, had a game that was coming up. And it was like a playoff game at one of the universities. And because the football game was starting 3 hours after their game, they closed the field and wouldn't let them play. And like a college had come from like out of town, and like they canceled their game because it was like adjacent to the football field that was going to happen, and like hours later. And even after there was like national outrage that this happened, there was like a half apology from the like university athletic director. And it's like, if that's the way that women are treated at the collegiate level, you know, think about what happens leading up to that, to think that that's okay. And then what happens after that, to think that that's okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because then it's like, well, if they're getting little girls used to the fact that their fields aren't kept up like the boys, and then they try to have this massive game in college, and then they're told like, oh, you can't even play yours because we're having a football game across the field, you know,
in 3 hours.
Sure. That's just grooming women to just take a back seat. And so that of course talks about gender politics, but then also let's talk about the fact that like the little girls team and the little boys team, well, how about those non-binary kids, you know, and they're at a young age and they're already being told like, choose your gender identity so that you can play ball.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So there's so many topics for us to discuss this season, just to like dive into and see how it impacts people, how it impacts athletes.
That's why this season will go on forever.
I know. That's why season two is going to last for a very, very, very long time. April, I feel like every single time we sit down and talk about concept, we just end up like 2 hours later, like we're talking about, like, I don't even know what.
I think you're right.
I'm excited. We also want to hear from y'all. So like, what do you all want to hear about, or what stories do you want to tell? Or is there a story happening in your town and you think that it needs more exposure? Or is there a coach or an athlete that you think we should talk to, or an educator, somebody who's a specialist that you think that we should learn from? And also, there's some topics that April and I want to tackle, but we aren't the experts on it, and we also don't know the experts on it. And so we'll probably be reaching out to y'all, to our listeners, to see if you can help us find people that can discuss these topics with us.
Definitely.
Definitely. We're on a Zoom call because I'm in Vancouver, British Columbia, and April's in Portland, Maine. So obviously we're nowhere close to each other. And I think, April, have you heard the seagulls on my end this whole time?
I did hear the seagulls on your end.
Oh my gosh. We have like a seagull colony on the apartment complex across from us. And I've started wearing earplugs because they start to do their seagulls stuff like really
seagulls
early.
Get loud.
Oh yeah, y'all have seagulls too.
Yeah, yeah. We're like literally on opposite coasts. Like I don't think maybe on North America we could get farther apart, but we're pretty
far apart. I wonder what latitude we're on, if we're on the same latitude.
Well, I don't know. Now we're going to have to research that.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, another thing we have to sort out. Yes. I'm just really excited.
Me too.
Yeah, and I am happy because it seems like all the people that listen to the Strong Athletic Podcast really are intrigued by what we talk about, and they really have the desire to learn information that they don't necessarily... So they don't think about every single day, or they don't hear about every single day.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely have found, like I mentioned, you know, before, part of what I got out of this podcast translated into other aspects of my life that was an unexpected bonus. I didn't really expect for the things that I learned as I listened to translate into things that I could implement at work with teams working at work. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah, I love that. It's almost like a freebie, like when you're reading a book on one thing and then suddenly you're like, oh my God, that applies to this other thing.
Connections.
Yes. I was going to say something.
It's what happens when it's 2 hours later.
Like, I know. What was that thing? I forgot. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, you know, one of the original intents of the Strong Athletic podcast was to help you become a better coach. And so we are going to continue to do that. But right now we're just kind of taking a break from those actual like coaching concepts that are, you know, try it this way or don't try it that way. Just because most likely you're like the rest of the world and you might be listening to this live in 2020. And there's not a lot of sports going on right now, so not a lot of coaching going on. So right now we're going to tackle some bigger questions and some bigger concepts that we've been like thinking about and thinking about how they relate to y'all, the listeners. And then we will continue to bring you all, I think I just made continue and y'all into one word. Continue all?
Continue y'all.
Yes, we will continue to bring you like actual applicable ways to coach and to be better at being coached. But for right now, we're going to step away from that for a second just to tackle some other things.
I love it. I think it'll be great.
Okay, so we're going to say bye to y'all, but then April and I usually stay on for a minute, so then we say bye to each other. So we'll say bye to y'all first, and then we'll say bye to each other. Long day. Friday at 8 p.m.
Bye-bye, friends.
Okay, bye. I'm super excited. I hope you're as excited as I am about April being on season 2.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Okay, thanks for tuning in. Y'all have a great day. We'll talk to y'all later.
Hey y'all, this is Nadia. I just wanted to tell you that the Strong Athletic podcast is brought to you by Strong Athletic, the company that empowers athletes and coaches within sports. Find show notes, show transcripts, and more information about our podcast at strongathleticpodcast.com. You can also go to strongathletic.com to see our selection of t-shirts, hats, fanny packs, and stickers, to read our latest blog posts, and to find out more about the company. Plus, the next time you feel like shopping, you can use the coupon code PODCAST, that's all lower letters, PODCAST, and get 10% off of everything in your cart. Thank you so much for listening, and also thank you so much for joining the Strong Athletic Movement. We'll talk to you the next time.